I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, no other phenomenon has shaped human history as decisively as capitalism, but how well do we understand capitalism, how it works, and where it's taking us? While capitalism has lifted so many out of poverty and improves the quality of life for billions, let's accept that we now live in a world where there is extreme wealth held in the hands of very few, and that wealth gap continues to grow. This is destabilizing societies, and many are asking, is capitalism working? Is the accumulation of extreme wealth inevitable? Is this a feature or a bug of capitalism? It's necessary to know how this economic system works, how it came to be, and if there are ways to tame capitalism. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico Studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We are all cogs in a vast machine of capitalism, a machine that is fed capital, and when it works right, it produces more capital, and if it doesn't, it goes bust. But as a small cog, I really don't understand what is happening or what my role is or even how I ended up in here. But Sven Beckert, his new book, Capitalism, A Global History, answers those questions. And he adds that capitalism is a machine that has adapted. It continues to adapt so it can be tamed. But first, we do have to understand capitalism. Sven Beckert joins us, Harvard University professor of history and author of Capitalism, A Global History. And Sven, welcome to The Source.
Great to be here, Dave.
So buy low, sell high. That's pretty much what I know about capitalism. Do people generally have an accurate, well-rounded idea of what capitalism is?
I think people have generally an idea that they live in a capitalist society, and they have also certain ideas of the way how capitalist societies work. It's capitalism surrounds us like water surrounds fish. All aspects of our lives are deeply structured by capitalism, by this capitalist logic. And of course, we have a certain understanding because it is so crucial to the way how we work, how we consume, how we how we experience technical innovations, how we organize our lives. So yes, we have a certain understanding of capitalism, but I think capitalism is one of these things that is so big, so huge, that you cannot understand it possibly from a local perspective, and you cannot understand it from just one moment in time, and you can certainly not understand it from a purely biographical perspective. You need to step back and to think, on a broader canvas of what makes this world so different from other forms of economic life, and what makes it also such a radical innovation in human life. And I think that three things you need to do in order to do this is: A, you need to understand that capitalism is not timeless. It's not that all of economic life on planet Earth always has been, broadly speaking, like the world we live in today. No, it has been radically different. And thus, capitalism is historical. And we need to, in order to understand where we are right now, we need to understand how we came to the point where we find ourselves. We need to understand capitalism from a historical perspective. And second, you need to understand that capitalism, even though, you experience it on a very local level, but it's a fundamentally global system. And you need to understand capitalism, you need to look at it from a global perspective, both in the past but also in the present. And then last but not least, We experience a certain kind of capitalism at the particular moment where we find ourselves. But capitalism has shifted drastically over time. Capitalism is one of the most undogmatic economic civilizations. And thus, to understand where you are right now, you need to understand how this particular moment in the history of capitalism fits into this larger story of how capitalism has unfolded during the past 500 years.
The ancient Rome, very robust society. They did global trade, a lot of markets happening in the streets of Rome. They didn't have capitalism.
No, they didn't. I mean, that is a really interesting question. So obviously, markets are not anything new. All human societies, as far as we know, have known of markets. And thus, you know, markets can hardly be definitional to capitalism. Of course, capitalism is characterized by markets, but that's not the only thing that characterizes capitalism. And the kind of logic that is capitalism has existed for a very long time. There have been merchant communities who, broadly speaking, organized their economic lives in ways that is strikingly modern, that is very recognizable to us for many hundreds of years. But what is important here is to see that this logic, this way of organizing economic life, for a long time was very marginal to economic life on planet Earth. People organized their economic lives in very, very different ways. And there were two principal ways of how economic life was organized differently. One was that many people were subsistence peasants. They provided for their own household, for their own family, and maybe for their own community. And second, there were those tributary rulers, feudal lords, who dispossessed the peasant in order to gain access to riches and to power and to wealth. So these are fundamentally different logics to economic life, and capitalism and the capitalist logic is something that has been around for a long time, but was embedded within these other logics and was quite marginal. And so the book starts in the year 1150 in the port of Aden in present-day Yemen, and describes a merchant community engaging in long-distance trade, a community that was strikingly modern. We immediately recognize what the logic of their activities was. And it ends in the country of Cambodia in the year 2023, when almost all of economic life on planet Earth is organized along a capitalist logic. And basically, the book asks, how do we get from a world in which the capitalist logic existed but was marginal to a world in which this logic now has taken over almost all aspects of economic life on planet Earth?
And is capitalism a natural outflow of people? Are we always going to adopt a capitalistic society eventually?
That's hard to answer because obviously, you know, we only know one history, namely the history as it unfolded. And of course, what we can see is that the world eventually became deeply structured by capitalism. And thus, you know, one could make the argument that you just made, that capitalism is kind of the ultimate outcome of human history. But I think that there is also a lot that speaks against that particular notion, because as we already discussed, this logic has been around for a long time, but it was quite marginal because so many people organized their lives, their economic lives, very differently. And also it was marginal because many people, including in more recent times, were quite reluctant to embrace this capitalist logic. So there were, for example, many feudal rulers in Europe who were not particularly eager to share the ability to exploit the peasants with some upstart merchants who wanted to, you know, interact with the peasants in different kinds of ways. There are also many subsistence farmers, many peasants at many different times in world history who did not want to turn into wage workers, or did not want to work in a factory, but preferred to organize their lives around their community, their family, and provisioning them with the goods that they could produce with their own hands. So I don't think capitalism is natural. It's something that is emerging at a particular historical moment for a particular reason, and becomes incredibly powerful. It surrounds us now every day and everywhere. But it is a radical departure in human history. It's a revolution in economic affairs. It's a revolution in how people organize their lives on planet Earth. And I think it needs to be understood as that.
Yeah, so we're going to dig into that a little bit more. We're going to take a break here. Our phone lines are open. You got a question or a comment about capitalism, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after a one-minute break.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about capitalism. What is it? How does it work? And where is it going? How did we get here? What are the ups and downs? You can call in with your questions and comments. We're speaking with Sven Beckert. He is the author of Capitalism, A Global History, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So when we say capitalism has been a great success, it's lifted so many people out of poverty, it's increased our lifespan, increased quality of life. So capitalism good? Do we say that?
I think you are exactly right that, as we discussed, there have been very many different forms of organizing economic activities in the past, but with the advent and the spread of capitalism, two things have happened that had never happened before. Namely, we have seen an enormous increase in economic growth and output, really incomparable to any other economic civilization ever before on planet Earth. And we also have seen an enormous, and this is directly linked, we have seen an enormous increase in human productivity. We produce with the same amount of labor today so much more than we produced 30 years ago or 100 years ago or 200 years ago. And that has created this world of really unbelievable abundance. I mean, the abundance is not shared by everybody, but from a long historical perspective, it certainly is one of the most striking things looking at this capitalist civilization is how it has resulted in this enormous abundance. Of course, this is not all that there is the story that there is to the story of capitalism, and the book that does very much try to tell the full history, including a whole different set of people, entrepreneurs, but merchants, industrialists. But I also speak a lot about peasants. I speak a lot about let's say sharecroppers. I talk a fair amount about slavery. I talk about workers in factories. I talk about the effects of colonialism and other such things. And of course, that is also part of the history of capitalism. So I think we can, I'm as somebody who is trying to understand this capitalism. I'm mostly interested in understanding it, and that means we need to understand it in its full complexity, and we need to look at all parts of its history. And this, for example, means when we look at the Industrial Revolution, which is a moment in the history of capitalism where we see some of the most significant sudden increase in economic growth and human productivity, we need to see also that this went hand in hand with an intensification of plantation slavery in the United States, for example. So the book is less interested in the question of good or bad. That's really not a question that is at the core of this project. But the book is really about to understand how we got to where we find ourselves right now, to enable us to also then think in creative ways about our future.
Let's go to a caller, 833-877-8255. And Steve, you're on the air.
It was real interesting what your guest just said about it not being a judgment of good or bad. I always look at it as like fire, the greatest and original engine that drove all of civilization. capitalism has lifted more people out of abject poverty than anything else. But like fire, it needs to be controlled and not just let run rampant. And I'll take the response off the air. Thank you.
All right, Steve, thank you for that. So, Sven, do you think fire is a good comparison?
Yes, thank you, Steve. That is a terrific picture. I like that. And if we stay with the fire now, I think fire can come in all kinds of shapes. It can look very different. You know, there can be a huge forest fire, or there can be a small fire in your fireplace at home, or there can be a flame on which you cook your meal. And I think that is also the case with capitalism in a weird way. Capitalism comes in all kinds of shapes and forms. It changes drastically over time. The capitalism of, let's say, the 1670s sugar plantation economy of Barbados is radically different from the capitalism of the Industrial Revolution of the 1850s in Manchester. And that, again, is very different from the capitalism of the 1960s, let's say, in Detroit and the Ford Motor Company. And that, again, is very different from the capitalism of a city like Shenzhen in the year 2026. So capitalism changes drastically over time, but capitalism also can look very differently at a particular moment in time. And we already spoke about the Industrial Revolution. And so here we have a great example of how capitalism can be, at a particular moment in time, can take on very different kinds of shapes. We see the expansion of the plantation economy and the intensification of slavery in the United States as a result of the Industrial Revolution in Britain. But we see also the expansion of wage work and industrial factories in Manchester. So this is exactly what this book tries to do, Steve. It tries to understand the kind of full diversity of this way of organizing economic life, and to understand how it changes over time, and perhaps also a little bit to understand why it changes in certain ways and how it changes in certain ways to enable us to think also about our present. And to see, you know, how we would like it to change in the future.
Let's go to Amy. And Amy, we're short on time, but I wanted to hear what you got to say. So go ahead.
Great, thank you. I'm curious, if anything, how do you see the possible demise of capitalism, and what might contribute to that? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right, we got about 2.5 minutes here, Sven. 2.5 minutes to tell me the demise of capitalism.
Okay, my line of business is to understand the past and not to predict the future. So this is almost impossible. But I think there are two things to say about that. For one, what you can see if you look at the 500 years of the history of capitalism, you see an enormous creativity in capitalism. You see capitalism as a fundamentally undogmatic way of organizing economic activity. And presumably that creativity and undogmatic nature is going to persist into the future. But what you can also say, on the other hand, you can say that capitalism is historical. It has a beginning. And of course, anything that has a beginning has also an end, but that doesn't really help us understand when this end is going to be or how it's going to unfold. And then we see, thirdly, we see something that is deeply concerning. And this is, we see that the logic of capitalism is fundamentally a logic of permanent growth, ever more production of goods and services and ever more capital. That, of course, draws on the ever greater consumption of natural resources. And there we see a conflict between the dynamic of capitalism, of ever continuing growth on the one hand, on the other hand, we see the logic of nature, which as such is, of course, limited.
Right. So that teases up. What I want to talk to you, we got to hit a break here, and we're going to be doing our pledge drive for about 5 minutes. We got to do some public radio capitalism ourselves. But when we come back, I do want to talk to you about that issue of we have this extreme wealth gap happening in our society. It's a destabilizing force. And also the problem of capitalism. It can change when we have these new issues of AI. We're going to have almost free labor, which is intellectual labor with AI and with robots, manual labor, maybe also a unlimited cheap forms of energy, as with renewable energy or even with fusion power. All that could, and maybe ending the economy of scarcity, is that going to change capitalism? We can only guess. We'll talk about that when we come back from our break. We're going to go to our pledge drive right now. And so we'll be right back after our pledge drive.
My name is Tom Dreisbach, and I'm a correspondent on NPR's investigations team. We really try to investigate where we think we can break new ground and make a difference. Health scams involving COVID, abuse in ICE detention centers, even sexual harassment by government officials. A lot of what we do is just good old-fashioned shoe leather reporting. We go to the place where news is happening, we document what we see, and then, depending on what we found, we'll dig even deeper to find the stories that no one else is covering. We're totally independent, and so we work for the people. And that is one of the most important parts of my job, is trying to dig up information that often powerful people don't want us to know, to better inform people about what's happening around them, and sometimes even improve their lives in tangible ways. We can't do it for you without you. So please give to this station today, and thanks.
And I'm David Martin Davies. This is the Texas Public Radio Spring Fundraising Drive. Every broadcast, every program, every story that you hear on Texas Public Radio takes people, time, and resources to produce. Today, sustaining this service depends entirely on listeners who believe trusted journalism and meaningful programming matters. And so we have a goal to reach 15,000 members during this drive, and we need your support. We want to be able to make it there. People who want to sustain us, if you can call in, TPR's future is on the line here in order to get there. So call in 800-622-8977, or you can also make your gift today at TPR.org or through the TPR app. And with me in the studio to tell us more is Texas Public Radio's education reporter, Camille Phillips.
Yes. Hello, everyone. We are in the middle of a challenge. We are being challenged. You are being challenged to raise $5,000 by 3 p.m. And when we do, two generous Texas Public Radio supporters will give an additional $5,000. So now is the time to give. We are always saying that, but we're telling you that, you know, the faster you give, the when you put your money where your mouth is, the faster we can return to doing what you come to us for, right? Which is report the news, give you the information you need to go about your day. And, you know, Texas Public Radio isn't just something you hear on the radio. It's something you experience in the community, from live storytelling and music to conversations and special events. You know that TPR brings people together across San Antonio and South Central Texas. Events like these are possible because of you as well. Give now at TPR.org and look for the red donate button on the TPR app or call 800-622-8977. We are under that $4,000 mark. We have less than $4,000 left to raise by three. Let's get that down to like $3,000 this hour. You think we can do that, Dave?
Oh, sure. I know we can.
We can do that.
Let's do it. So we're talking about capitalism on The Source today. So listeners, have I got a deal for you? You know, in the terms of capitalism, you know, you put capital in, you want to have more capital returned in your investment, and we can do that. We can do that with you right now on Texas Public Radio. But instead of thinking about of capital, think about value. Value for you, value for your community. Just overall, it is improving quality of life, improving a public good. When you support Texas Public Radio, you are going to see the value that you put into us magnified, amplified, growing it and helping so many others and creating a more powerful community, informing people, helping them, directing them to important services, telling them about what's happening in their community, why are these public policies? How are they being crafted? What's going on in their schools? These are all the things that we can do for you. You know, so I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask you to become a sustainer for Texas Public Radio. When you can become a sustainer for Texas Public Radio, you give us a base of support, something we can count on day in and day out. We know that we can count on that monthly support coming in from you and all of your friends and neighbors, keeping public radio strong. The value that we're asking for you to put in, and hope, and if everyone does their part, you don't got to do a bunch, you know, just come in at a basic level and you can support Texas Public Radio, help keep us strong. And we're going to multiply that over and over again and really do some awesome things day in and day out. But we got to get you to pull the trigger, do the right thing. You know you want to, so do it right now. 800-622-8977. You can go online to tpr.org, use the app, and thank you, thank you, thank you. We're going to go back to our conversation about capitalism. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're speaking with historian Sven Beckert. His book is Capitalism, A Global History. He argues that capitalism is not just trade or markets. It's not just some natural condition of human life, but a human-made system that emerged over centuries through global commerce, state power, colonial expansion, and the relentless drive to turn capital into more capital. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Peter's been holding for a while, and Peter, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I was wondering, so with all the industry consolidation going on lately and the government allowing all of that, can capitalism really survive in a society where monopolies take over all the industries? What's your feeling about that?
All right, Peter, thanks for that question. And Sven Beckert.
Yeah, Peter, that's a great question. And I share your concerns. Obviously, as a historian who has studied the past 500 years in the history of capitalism, I have to observed that monopoly or near monopolies or the very decisive concentration of capital in the hands of very few people is quite common in the history of capitalism. Just think about, you know, an earlier moment, the East India Company that came to rule trade between Europe and much of Asia was for a very long time was a state enforced monopoly. So we see that at many moments. This is nothing new. I mean, this doesn't make it any better, but it just shows that this is nothing new. But of course, monopolies have all kinds of bad results. For example, for consumers, we're going to have to pay higher prices. And I think there is a kind of tendency within capitalism, left to its own devices, that economic power becomes ever more concentrated, monopolies become more common, and it's also true that inequality increases drastically. And of course, we know that there are political mechanisms through which this trend in capitalism can also be reversed. I think the book, you know, emphasizes very much as Dave just said, it emphasizes very much that this economic civilization we live in has been made by us. It's politically constituted. The state has played a very important role in all moments of its history, and thus it can address these problems that you mentioned as well.
And so Peter's question, he mentioned, you know, the government allows these mergers to happen. So the government is part of capitalism. The state is necessary for capitalism to exist. It has to have a money supply that's regulated and uniform. You have to have things like rule of law so that you can keep what's yours. Private property is maintained as private property. These are things that the state does so that capitalism can exist.
No, this is astounding. I mean, the state, if you look at the full history of capitalism, you see the state everywhere. In all moments of its history, the state is a powerful presence. It creates infrastructure, it regulates markets, it creates money, it expands militarily, it protects markets through tariffs. Wherever you look, the state is everywhere. It, of course, it changes over time. It's not always exactly the same, but principally, I see capitalism as one of the most state-centric civilizations in human history. And that might come as a surprise to some listeners, because often you think of capitalism as kind of the opposite of the state. The more capitalism, the less state, and the less state, the more capitalism. But I think if you look at the history of capitalism, that turns out to be wrong. And if you look at it from a very long historical perspective, you see that the expansion of capitalism went hand in hand with the expansion of the scale and scope of the state. These are almost two parallel processes. And thus, when we think about capitalism, we need to think about the state, and we also need to think about politics. And in some ways, this is also a good thing, because it does remind us that we are the architects of this civilization, and we are not just the takers of natural laws or God-given laws that come down to us, and we can do the best to the best of our ability to decipher these laws and then to behave accordingly. No, this is an economic civilization that has been shaped by us, that has been shaped by states, that has been shaped by politics, and it will continue to be shaped by us, by politics, and by states.
Let's go to Christian on the phones. And Christian, you're on the air.
Hello. I hope this isn't too much of a complicated question, but I think it's relevant. I would like to know what the speaker's comments are or what their thoughts are on the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency. What is the petrodollar? Does the U.S. export its inflation to other countries through a strong dollar? And I guess, what will U.S. monetary and fiscal policy need to look like if or when the U.S. dollar is no longer the preferred medium of exchange on global markets? Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Christian. The dollar is weak right now, and it'll probably be even weaker given what's happening with the oil markets because of the petrodollar. But Sven, you want to take that on?
Look, this is an important question, and it's somewhat beyond my expertise. I mean, I can just say that the United States has been crucial in a particular moment in the history of capitalism, especially since 1945. It has taken on the role of regulating global capitalism in very many ways, and its currency, the dollar, has played a crucial role as a result in the global economy, which has conveyed all kinds of great economic advantages to the United States. There are observers who think that this moment is coming to an end, which is also, of course, a development that would be very impactful to the status of the dollar as the world's most important currency. But I don't have, you know, the book and doesn't really have any kind of specific policy recommendations on these kinds of issues, except maybe I can, you know, once upon a time the British pound was at the center of the global economy, and once upon a time Spanish silver coins were at the center of the global economy, and once upon a time Arab silver coins were at the center of the global economy. So we can see that nothing is stable. You know, the capitalism is a state of constant revolution. Things that we take for granted, things that we think of are almost like an unchanging part of the world we live in, are actually all historical, and they can change, and they will change, and they have changed in the past, and that certainly also applies to the role of particular currencies in the global economy. I think, you know, because you remark on kind of very recent history, namely what happened in the past 7 days, and of course this is on everybody's mind, and I think that's an important conversation to be had. But I think sometimes, and this is what the book tries to encourage, sometimes it's important to step back a little bit. We are almost breathlessly chasing the news of the past 24 hours and try to make sense of it. And this is important, and I understand why we do that. But sometimes it's important to take a deep breath and step back and to look at it from a more distant perspective in order to understand the world and maybe also to orient ourselves within this world in different ways that then allows us to think about the future in a way that goes beyond just confronting what encountered us on social media in the past 24 hours. Obviously, the problem you mentioned, Christian, is a much deeper one that goes back for a long time. But I think also here it helps to think about a long history. And of course, it also helps to think about it as you do, Christian. You know, you need to think about this from a global perspective. What is happening in the Middle East, even though it's far removed from South Texas, is extremely relevant to the lives of people in South Texas. So we need to understand that capitalism is a networked global system in which change in one part of the world has repercussions in all other parts of the world. And that we can only understand, we started out with this conversation, Dave, we can only understand ourselves, we can only understand the communities that we live in, we can only understand the problems that we personally face if we put them into this larger global and historical perspective.
But capitalism, what it values, what it assigns value to, seems to be only capital, right?
I mean, this is the foundational dynamic of capitalism. I think that's what defines capitalism as a system in which privately owned capital is productively invested for the further production of capital. Yes. So this is clearly what drives the system. Of course, as a result of that, there are all kinds of other things that come about, such as technical innovation, productivity gains, you know, economic growth, further output. All of that is related to this. But that is the fundamental logic, Dave. I totally agree.
But it doesn't measure happiness or quality of life just, you know, if the society will continue, if humanity will continue. These are questions that, you know, seems like we'll get to this when we come back from the break. Is capitalism in itself a rational system? And we can talk about that when we come back. And we'll also take questions from callers, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source continues after this quick break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Our guest is Finn Beckert. He is the author of Capitalism, A Global History. His work challenges one of the most familiar stories of modern life, the idea that capitalism naturally emerged from freedom, innovation, and markets alone. Instead, he says, it rises deeply, is entangled with empire, slavery, state violence, and political power. You can call in with 833-877-8255. Back to the question I asked before break about capitalism not being rational. Is that something that is seen?
I think that's a good observation, Dave. Its fundamental logic, as we just discussed, is the growth of capital, the further accumulation of capital, and in some ways, you know, that logic to economic life is not as such vested in thinking about if this is going to produce human happiness or if it produces environmental devastation or that is not part of the calculus.
Or more climate change. I mean, here we are hurling the planet towards destruction. But because of capitalism, we really are having trouble correcting.
And in some ways, you know, this is a logic to economic life that we as humans over many centuries have given great power to, and in some ways it has emancipated itself from us. It's almost its own logic that is somewhat separate from how we what we what we would, how we would like to live, and how we would like to preserve the planet on which we live. It's almost kind of an artificial intelligence that has gone rogue, that has, you know, kind of taken on, has emancipated itself from its creators. But of course it can also be it can be channeled in different ways, and has historically been channeled in different ways. But yes, you mentioned earlier, you know, the enormous wealth gap, the enormous social inequality that the recent decades in the history of capitalism have produced in a country like the United States. Yes, this is an absurd level of social inequality. It is totally unacceptable. It has also produced pressures on our planet, on the natural environment, that are threatening the very existence of humans on planet Earth. So, you know, this is but on the other hand, the capitalist revolution has brought with it, as we discussed earlier, these enormous productivity gains, these enormous economic growth. And now in a country like the United States, we are so rich that, you know, from the perspective of our economic ability, of our capabilities, we could solve most of the kind of pressing social problems that we have. Every American could have access to excellent healthcare. Every American could have access to high quality education. Certainly, every American should have access to food and quality housing. There's nothing in our economic world that would make that impossible. It's political choices that lead us to a world in which we have these absurd levels of inequality, in which we have the lack of access to very basic needs, resources that meet very basic needs, and we have a world in which we put ever more pressures on our natural environment.
Right. Are we going to work for capitalism, or is capitalism going to work for us? Let's go to Spencer. Spencer, you're on the air.
Hello. My question is, we've established here that the basis of capitalism to some extent is the extraction of surplus value. What surplus value does capital itself provide, or does all increases in surplus value come from the exploiting the labor of workers?
All right, Spencer.
My question. Thank you.
Thank you for that. All right, okay, Sven. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, Spencer. That's a great question, and as you probably know, people have debated that for a very long time, for more than a century, And yes, the exploitation of labor is certainly very important to this story. But is it the only story? It's certainly also, you know, about consumers and providing goods to consumers that encourage investment and are productive of profit on capital investments. I would be a little worried about, yeah, making an argument that is solely reliant on the exploitation.
Well, let me jump in here. We're almost out of time, and yeah, I want to get to this question because we're getting to the era of AI and robotics and also abundant cheap energy. Is that going to change capitalism?
I mean, in some ways, it's not a fundamental change, because technological change has been a constant in capitalism's history. There have been drastic productivity gains in previous history. Maybe this is going to speed up productivity growth in ways that is unprecedented. But right now, we don't see any signs for that. The productivity growth is actually quite subdued. And but look, it could be devastating to society. It could potentially lead to the loss of huge numbers of well-paying jobs. It could further undermine political stability. It could further economic inequality. But I think we have to be careful to ascribe that solely to the technology as such, because we could also look at it differently. We could see that productivity gains are beneficial. It would allow us,
sure, if the wealth is shared.
It worked less, exactly, if we would work fewer hours, or we could, you know, yes, we could share the productivity gains broadly, as we have done in the 1950s and 1960s, yeah, in the United States. So there's no reason of why.
But it's going to talk to people. People have to get involved. Capitalism can be adapted. Capitalism.
Yes.
a Global History. Sven Beckert, Harvard University History Professor, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
And we're going to our pledge drive. Stay with us.
I'm Ada Peralta, and I cover Mexico, Central America, and the Caribbean for NPR. Lately, I've been covering the U.S. strikes on boats in the Caribbean and the momentous news out of Venezuela. I prioritize bearing witness, hard to bear witness in an open ocean, hard to bear witness in Venezuela because we're not allowed in. And so the next best thing is to surround the story. We went to Trinidad, where we spoke to family members of who they said were fishermen who went off into the waters and never came back. We complement what you're hearing from Washington with what's actually happening on the ground. And I think that's really the important part of getting as close to the truth as you possibly can. NPR is committed to helping you better understand the world. Invest in in-depth international coverage today by giving to this station. Thanks.
And this is Texas Public Radio's Spring Fundraising Drive. I'm David Martin Davies. And as you know, Texas Public Radio is dependent upon the people who appreciate what we do. They see us as a public good, a place that can actually really support San Antonio and lift up the community. This is what we strive for every day, but we can't do it without you. We're a vehicle for you also to do those things. If you want to see the community improve, if you want to help others, if you want to inform others, well, then we're here to help you help us do that with our spring fundraising drive. So we need to increase the number of our sustaining members. We're working towards that goal right now. If you're not a sustaining member, why don't you become one? You know, or if you don't know, you could call right now and we'll tell you what your status is. You can call 800-622-8977. We've got people there who they can go through the records. They can tell you exactly what your status is with Texas Public Radio and help you get that sorted out. Or you can also just go online to tpr.org or go to the TPR app and help take and support Texas Public Radio that way. With me now in the studio, Camille Phillips, our award-winning education reporter. And Camille.
Yes, I'm here with our award-winning talk show host, too. But thank you very much, everyone. You are our listeners that make it all happen, and we've made a lot of progress this hour. Last time I talked to you, I said we had a challenge to raise $5,000 by 3 p.m. Well, at the time, I thought we were just under $4,000, but now we're already down to $2,300 left to raise. So let's take it over the top. Let's have the source listeners bring it home. Let's finish this challenge early. And then when we do, we can even make up a little bit because we kind of didn't quite make our challenge this morning. So let's change the scope and get ahead of the game and make sure we're on track to finish this drive strong and early and raise the money that you need, that we need to keep Texas Public Radio the strong news and information source that you rely on.
Right. We're just talking about how big this book is about capitalism. It is huge. It is a tome, over 1,000 pages and a lot of words in those thousands of pages. And so, you know, getting ready for being able to have this topic and take it on and allow our really smart listeners jump in on the conversation mm-hmm. and talk directly to this Harvard history professor and a well-known, but you know, egghead guy, you know, and talk about these things. Nowhere else are you going to get that. You know, that's just a Texas Public Radio. We're going to bring that to our local community. But I think there are a lot of people that really appreciate the fact that we have these types of mm-hmm. conversations. That is something that we do when we talk about, well, what is capitalism and how does it work for us? And how do we think about it in a way that we can still keep the good things of lifting people out of poverty, but also address some of the bad things about, like, how is this crushing us and disrupting our society? Mm-hmm. We need to have those conversations and we need to hear from you. It's got to be a two-way dialogue. And I'm really happy to be able to do that and have your support to make that happen. So when you pledge your support to Texas Public Radio, you're supporting the source. You're supporting Camille's work for covering education here in San Antonio and an area across the state. All of this is happening because of your investment, an investment that pays off day in and day out, over and over again, not just for you, but for everyone in our listening area. We're reaching so many people. So keep Texas Public Radio strong. Call in right now, 800-622-8977. Join your friends and neighbors today by going online to tpr.org or go through the TPR app. And thank you.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.